Welcome to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. I'm here with Wayne. Wayne, for everyone out there listening, would you please introduce yourself?
Okay. Thank you, Robbie, for allowing me to be here. My name is Wayne Rohde. I am father of twin boys. They're 24. Nick was severely injured with MMR at the age of 13 months, and he was later diagnosed with regressive autism. My other son, Austin, who lives with us, and we live up in Minnesota. I'm the author of two books on the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Programs, otherwise known as the Vaccine Court. It's the name of the books, Vaccine Court and the Vaccine Court 2.0. I'm also host of the Right on Point podcast and also the Autism File podcast, two different podcasts. And I write extensively regarding issues surrounding vaccine injury, civil liberties, the legalities of the COVID pandemic worldwide. So I'm happy to be here with you today.
Now, so where would you like to start, like with vaccine injury, for instance? Now, my stance has kind of changed on vaccines. I think if you are susceptible, if you do have comorbidities, then you probably should get vaccinated. But I just don't like mandates. I don't like people that are perfectly healthy getting forced to take them. I think we connected over episode I had as well, too, with Peter Myers, who we talked about the vaccination program, but he was pro mandates and he was kind of a little bit different views on some things. I don't know what your stance is. Maybe you can enlighten me, and also maybe some information that you have that has you thinking the way that you might think.
Well, Peter Myers, who is an attorney in Washington, D.C., and he was actually, he developed a law clinic at Georgetown Law School to train attorneys who practice in the MVICP, because it's a different legal process than a regular federal or state court. I've known Peter for many years. Now, my stance on vaccines is that it should be up to the parent or the guardian or the individual to make decisions. Always been, you know, when we get labeled as anti-vaxxers, it's by people who show their ignorance of not knowing exactly what's happening. My son was vaccine injured, but my other son was not. And that always perplexed me as well. Why did that happen? And unfortunately, those types of questions and those answers are lost in this debate over we need to vaccinate everybody or let's let people decide for what's best with them. I side with parental rights, medical freedom, and letting people decide. Now, mandates are interesting. This is that you're trying to mandate something that has no repercussions, and we have no ability to seek a remedy against that manufacturer for that mandate for any type of an injury. That's why the MVICP was established in 1986, and we cannot sue the manufacturers for injury, and that's where we are today with the what we call the vaccine court. And it's also interesting is that now with the COVID pandemic, you have the COVID vaccines, but also other products such as drugs, antiviral medicines, medical devices are now being included in a compensation program called the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, which is very problematic. And this is where Peter and I work together on is just trying to get people to understand the major problems with this and the reforms that are going to be needed. Because yes, there are a lot of people being injured by the COVID vaccines, but there's a lot of people that were injured because of the ventilators, the improper use of ventilators, the improper use of using certain medicines off label under what we call emergency use authorization and EUA status, such as remdesivir, that's killed hundreds of people. So I like to work with people. We might not agree, you know, 30%, 50% of the time, but we still work together. So it's called a common civil discourse. Peter wants to have vaccines across the board for everyone, but I've always kidded him. And well, we work together to the point where if you're going to have a vibrant vaccination policy in the United States, you better have a safety net for those who are going to be injured, because there will be some. And that's where we agree and we work together on. He knows my stance on vaccination. I know his stance, but we still work together to try to improve this compensation program.
I feel like I would have been more comfortable to get it if they would have let me sue the company if something went wrong. Just that freak chance. I mean, my whole life has been scenarios that are rare or nobody's really experienced before. So it would only make sense that I would have that question to ask. But you start finding, you know, like at least for my deep dives, I mean, Pfizer and the United States government has worked together on things for a very long time, including, I think there's a thing called the Vigo Ordnance Plant you can look up. I posted up saying it's conspiratorial. But it was a bioweapons lab that was sold in like the 50s, and the person who bought it was Pfizer. Now, if you're going to just make a lab making medicine, you don't need to buy a United States bioweapons lab. Now, when I say conspiracies, I don't think they have any dark intent with it, but I just think they've been working together for a very long time. Now, the answer to why you couldn't sue a pharmaceutical company or this pharmaceutical company, but you can, I'm pretty sure you can still sue Johnson & Johnson. I'm pretty sure you can sue the other ones, but just that one specific, you cannot. And I go, it's probably because they want to do work with them more in the future. They don't want to cut off ties by letting them get sued if their vaccine does mess up. But people said, no, it's because they did a mass rollout. And I go, you got to understand, like, a mass rollout is one thing, like being forced to create a bunch of batches, but you should have the method perfected by then, right? So there wouldn't be any issues with it. And there's just been a lot of things where I found if you start asking a lot of questions, people are more than happy to put you in a category of anti-vax and anti-this. Now, with the number of, we're on our fourth booster shots now, the number of those people getting another booster shot and are suffering from vaccine side effects has now become not really the minority a whole lot anymore, starting to become increasingly over time. And that you get to see in a couple examples I can name. Norman Fenton was on my show. He's a UK risk analysis researcher during this pandemic. He has shown that a lot of the data that is really not supportive of what they're pushing out. There's plenty of evidence to show adverse effects. There's plenty of evidence to show that lockdowns are terrible. There's plenty of evidence to show masks are ineffective, but you're not seeing that on major media. They're not reporting on a lot of the stuff about the pandemic in general. Now it's kind of switched to a different narrative. But one thing I would point out to any YouTube or content creator is look on their guidelines and look what they added. You can now talk about having a vaccine adverse effect if it's a personal experience. My only issue throughout this whole pandemic was that if I asked a question, I was labeled as something. But also, when I asked a question, you told me there is no data. I've seen it. You can't tell me it doesn't exist. You're literally saying, no, this doesn't exist, when there's plenty of evidence and there was plenty of stuff that people have seen and talked about. You've just silenced it. You've made it so it doesn't pop up. It's not going to, I'll be fine if it's at the eighth page search result, but now you've literally made it sound like we're in some type of conspiracy movie where you've just eliminated it off the board. And now it's like, if I'm only giving you the option of saying yes, well, I always know from when I was a kid, I could say yes or no. No, these questions now are just strictly going to be yes. It's like, that's not a question. No, we changed the definition of question. It's like, what? What are we talking about? Like, I think these are things that I'm not saying I'm making like these things of our government's trying to kill us, but I'm saying these are things, are rational things that you can make questions about. You have to start asking questions. And what you've done to the public, I think, or not you, I mean, just the overall general direction this pandemic has been take what we give you and don't ask questions. Ask your doctor 10 questions about any medication, they fall off around 5 or 6, is because they don't really expect you to keep following up with more and more questions. It becomes exhausting. I work in sales, front desk at a gym. It's exhausting when someone goes, I want to read what I'm signing. I'm like, oh, just fucking sign it. Like, it's, these are things that are rational to look at. And then when you realize that they're being silenced and these people that are trying to get it out there are not given a platform to be able to do so, you enter really, really, really dangerous territory where the future of how your government runs, the future of how society runs, the future of these social constrictions that are on people. And that also goes into what we label people as. I mean, these are all issues and they're all a chain effect. And I gave you a lot, I'm sorry, but it's a topic right now that I'm so like in and out of talking about with the vaccines and just COVID in general. It's just because it gets so heated, there's no rational discourse that comes through it.
Well, you're correct there. And people have to understand, let's step back here and look at what a traditional vaccine, you know, the clinical trial process. Normally, if you're developing a measles vaccine, it might take you 7 to 10 years worth of clinical trials data to look at it before the application to the FDA to get what we call a biologic license, a full BLA licensure. The reason why it takes that long is that it's not the immediate reactions that we're looking at from people in a full clinical trial. You want mass numbers. So that's where the second phase and the third phase is start when you start getting into the 5,000, 10,000, 25,000 groupings of people. But you want to tease out long-term issues such as autoimmune disorders, such as fertility and sterility issues. That's why you have that. So by the time you're done, it's 10, 11 years into development, you kind of know what the risk groups are. Okay. With the COVID stuff, we were looking at 6 to 8 months is basically the clinical trials. And we still don't know. And my fear is that a lot of people say, oh, I got the COVID shots and I'm fine. Well, I'll come back to you in 3 to 4 years when you have develop myocarditis or having some heart issues or having transverse myelitis or other Guillain-Barré or paralyzing issues or other chronic such as arthritis, migraines and stuff that might take longer than 6 months. It might take a couple years to develop. That's when we're going to see things really jump as far as medical conditions and go up. And this COVID stuff is just nuts. There is not one medical reason for a healthy individual under the age of 40 to get this vaccine. There is not one logical reason. You look at the applications, and thank God for Aaron Suri and ICANN suing the FDA to release all the Pfizer documents. And look at all the people that are researching it. Your Dr. Malone's, your Dr. Peter McCullough that's on your program. Naomi Wolf, there's a ton of people that are looking at this stuff and is starting to unravel all the problems. The lawsuit that's pending right now that's really interesting and really intriguing is Brooke Jackson. She was heading up one of the contracting firms that Pfizer contracted with to develop the third, the clinical trial third stage. And she found a lot of corruption. And that is now, that lawsuit's now starting to proceed forward. And Pfizer's trying to get this dismissed. I don't know if you know about it, but Pfizer's grounds to dismiss this lawsuit is that, well, the government was complicit with us. They allowed us to be fraudulent and report inaccurate data. So therefore, we shouldn't be at fault. Think about that. If Pfizer is correct, they're saying the government was complicit with our fraudulent studies. Now you know the basis of why we got this forceful impact of mandates and getting everybody get vaccinated. And it's just, it's infuriating. And, you know, you've mentioned that third boosters and fourth boosters. I often look at, why is it, because you stoke the fear of, you create this fear structure, this mass psychosis, if you will. Everybody says, oh, you're going to die if you don't get the COVID vaccine. Actually, it's flip-flop now. You know, people are starting to have serious reactions, long-term reactions after getting the third and the fourth dose. And I'm holding out that I think within the next 24 to 36 months, we're going to really see some serious problems. And I pray to God that it doesn't happen, but I believe it's going to happen. With people who have been completely vaxxed. They're the ones catching COVID right now. You notice all the, if you watch, I'm a big fan of Major League Baseball. All the baseball players that are catching COVID were vaxxed. Okay?
Yeah.
Soccer players falling dead on the field. Rugby players, lacrosse players. These are young adults, healthy adults, that should not even be close to this vaccine, but they're being forced by these professional sports leagues that you got to do it to travel, whatever. It's insane what's happening here.
Do you think it's going to shift? Do you think it's going to, the narrative's going to switch? Like, we've seen the narrative of masks kind of switch. It seems like once that dropped off, people talk about the bad, aspects of masks, even though in some places like doctor's offices and dentist office, you have to have a mask on, which, I mean, if you got to wear it in one building, that's whatever. I never really had a huge problem with masks, but I did have a problem with lockdowns. But I think now everyone's agreed that the narrative is now lockdowns were actually way worse. The amount of depression. And here's a thing that I just ask people to question, because it's very, very important. If the media really cared so much as they're saying about getting you vaccinated and making sure that you're vaccinated, not only, let's take the example of the Pfizer advertisement that happens on every single network. That's industry influence right there. You're having business now mixing with your media. Of course, they're not going to talk shit on their pharmaceutical company. But you know what? For the people out there that want to rival against that, let's toss that example out, okay? I'll give you another example. When we talk about media, how come if they really care about getting you vaccinated, they haven't reported in the past year that kids from the ages of 19 to 49 have over 1 million deaths due to opioids? I mean, if you really care about people, you think there'd be a fucking news story on that. Like, to me, that sucks, because I've lost friends to that stuff. And I'm like, how come this isn't being reported? How come this isn't being talked about? Then you look up the actual statistics of it and you realize that this is a way bigger issue that needs to be addressed, and it's not even being talked about at all. It's just get vaccinated. And I honestly seen that narrative drop. I haven't seen, you know, that number counter that used to be the percentage of people vaccinated on CNN or Fox News anymore. Now it was Ukraine for a while. Then it went on to something else. And it's like, are you realizing that the data is now showing the opposite of what you were reporting in the beginning, where now you just are trying to bury it all and get away from it? Like, it's kind of like the Ukraine issue. They were talking trash on Ukraine for the longest time, and then once Russia invaded, they switched the narrative. And I start going, I don't think they realize what they're really doing to people. And that is creating a lot of fear. But it's also the power that they have. There's manipulation, where I'm wondering, in the next year or so, or the 24 months or the 36 months, are we going to see the narrative flip, where the people who were originally saying you need to get vaccinated, you're going to kill somebody, are they going to realize, oh my God, maybe I made the mistake of getting vaccinated? You know, because right now what I've seen from people who are vaccinated and get COVID, they're like, did I do something wrong? Like, they're blaming themselves. I'm like, no, that you don't understand that the vaccine never was going to stop you from getting COVID. That wasn't what it was supposed to do. It's supposed to lessen your symptoms. But you're seeing a lot of people that either have vaccine regret, vaccine hesitancy, at least not when it comes to booster shots. And it just enters this whole area of like confusion, where I mentioned, imagine someone wanting to get a vaccine shot now. And they go and they take a picture of themselves getting a shot, like everybody took that cringe picture of them getting a shot. Then they just get comments of people calling them pieces of trash for waiting so long. Like, you've let this thing not only go from politics, but you've let it land in the social part, where we've now based our decisions of whether we choose someone's value on the basis of if they have a vaccine or not, if they wear a mask or not. That is not cool. And that is not something that you want to let progress even farther down the rabbit hole.
Well, you brought up a point here, and it's really important that we keep mentioning this, and that's the opioid issue. Now, I've dug into this very deeply, and I've talked to Gerald Posner, New York Times bestselling author, who's written a marvelous book called Pharma.
He wrote a JFK book too.
And it is unbelievable. And then also a former New York City assistant district attorney, her name is Charlotte Bismuth, who brought the first successful prosecution of a doctor who wrote prescriptions for opioids and sold them as cash. And she prosecuted this guy, Stanley Lee. Now, what a lot of people don't understand is fentanyl has killed more people, more kids, meaning I should say people under the age of 30, than gun violence in the United States. Do you believe that? That's unbelievable. Last year.
It's weird how you don't hear anything about it. It's kind of like RFK's book, The Real Anthony, or RFK Jr.'s mm-hmm. book, The Real Anthony Fauci. It's got like 27,000 five-star reviews, but not a single word has ever been spoken about it. And it's like not showing. Like, there's people I follow on Instagram where I'll type in their, or not Instagram, it's Twitter, and I'll type in their full name and it doesn't show up. And I go, how am I supposed to tag this person Shadow for an man. Episode? Yep. But it's like, and then when you request to follow someone who is deemed skeptical or deemed kind of conspiratorial, it'll say, are you sure you wish to follow them? I was like, in no other aspect on any other person's profile have you ever given me that, where you start realizing like these are just small ways of creating this long structure that has a chain reaction and silencing someone. And it's not, I mean, I get it. Some people still fight the fight of like, I'm going to make sure that my 2-year-old gets vaccinated. That's cool. I mean, that's you, I guess, if you're the parent, you feel like that's what your thing is to do. But when you're forcing every single person saying they need to follow what exactly you want to do is where I have issues, because it's an authority problem. You're acting like you have the power to make a decision in someone's life without even knowing their middle name. I told anybody, I challenge anybody, if you find out what my middle name is, then you can tell me to go get a shot, but don't sit there and give me medical advice, especially trust the science. What science? You haven't given me anything. When I ask for data, you don't show me data. If you look at ResearchGate, if you look at any scientific journal, go to their Twitter. I did this recently. I went on ResearchGate's Twitter. They're following Joe Biden. They're following every single vaccine company, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer. Now, follow Joe Biden, I don't care. But if you're following the vaccine institutions, and then I go onto your website and I look at all the things that say get vaccinated, like all these studies saying vaccines work, and I hit author affiliations, it shows you that a medical company that works with Pfizer is sponsoring them for this study. Of course, you're not going to talk trash on the person that's funding you the money. I've done this extensively after Carla Peters, who was on my show, told me you need to go get your medical information. You need to go get your database information off scientific articles in Germany and some other country that has no attachment to these drugs because they're not available over there. And I go, you start realizing the doors open up and you enter this world of like, holy crap, I've been drugged.
Well, one of the things you mentioned, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s book, The Real Anthony Fauci. And Mr. Kennedy keeps talking about captured agents or agencies. And what's interesting is most people don't understand the FDA is a sub-agency of Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, along with CDC and NIH and a few others, and HRSA. FDA receives a majority of their funding from the pharmaceutical industry. They don't keep their, a lot of their annual budget doesn't come from the federal government. It comes from what we call user fees for applications and other things when pharmaceutical companies apply for either UA status or BLA status, not only on vaccines, but other biologics plus drugs. It's insane how much money pharmaceutical industry supports our federal government and then also uses it in lobbying efforts. So our federal government's captured. And that's why you see public health people out there telling everybody to get vaccinated. And it's not on real science, as you keep talking about. And it's true. There is no real science. I often say that our media is nothing but stenographers for public health. And the public state of public health officials are nothing but cheerleaders for the pharmaceutical industry. If you look at a state health department official, all they're doing is just regurgitating whatever pharma tells them to say. Look at media, whether it's national media or local newspapers, they're all writing the same thing. They all talk about, and you're out on Twitter, you'll have stories of someone who has passed away or had suffered severe injury from the virus. There are people out there like that, but they refuse to run the stories of someone who has suffered a severe injury from a COVID vaccine or some type of a medicine used to treat COVID. They refuse to do that. They only tell you one side of the story. You've got opioids, fentanyl, you've got suicides are just unbelievable. And you talked about lockdowns. When I went to college, economics was my study. And I remember talking about what we call lives lost. There's a term called lives lost. And when you always compare something, how many people died because of this forest fire or something else, you also have to look at the other side of it. A friend of mine named Hugh McTavish here in Minnesota wrote a book called COVID Insanity, and he analyzed the lockdowns. And he's come up and is very mathematical about it. And that is that for every one person we saved by using lockdowns, we've possibly have cost 4 to 4.5 lives lost because of that. And when you get in there, you look at suicide rates up, mental health, depression, drug overdose, alcohol overdose, domestic abuse. Those things all lay out in front of us, but no one's talking about that because we media keeps them hidden. But if someone says, well, we saved lives with the lockdown, have them prove it, and they can't. That's how you break this narrative down. You're talking about switching narratives. I don't think we'll ever get to a point where the United States will run together and say, hey, you know, the vaccines are causing too many injuries. Because pharmaceutical industry is the most powerful lobby out there. They spend twice as much money as the oil and gas industry and defense companies. You know, pharmaceuticals are unbelievable, lobby out there. There's just too much money. Our government makes money because of it. But I think grassroots, social media influencers like yourself with all your podcasts and your message, people need to have choice. Look at the difference between the number of people that got the original vaccine, that same group, how many people got the first booster, that group that's going to get the second booster, and et cetera. You see a dramatic decline. People are thinking, wait a minute, they're waking up. Sooner or later, the message will be sent. That's why you see this push. We want to get children as young as 6 months to the age of 5 vaccinated. They're already, yesterday, there was already press conferences by HHS talking about this, and yet we don't even have an approval process. But they're saying, oh, we think by this week in June, you know, 2 weeks from June 21st, it's going to be approved or made available. Yet there's no approval process. So it tells me that has already been set in stone. They're going to get approved. And we're going to start vaccinating 1-year-olds and 2-year-olds. Will the media cover when those kids are in the hospital and fighting for their lives after they got vaccinated? Will they cover a 4-year-old who died because of a vaccine? Probably not, because they don't do it now. They hide all the SIDS deaths. That's one good thing that came out of the lockdown, is that all these parents that didn't go take their kids in for well baby checkups, otherwise known as let's get poked by vaccines. SIDS rates dropped at approximately the same rate as parents not taking their children in for childhood vaccines. And CDC didn't like that. So we'll see what happens with the narrative. I think you'll see some changes here.
Do you have any important data or important stuff that you've seen that maybe the general public could look up or maybe would find interesting to know more about? Like, I think that opioid thing, a lot of people probably don't know a whole lot about. But anything, either if it comes to vaccines, because my whole thing is like, I mean, just from the topic of vaccines, for instance, it has deterred some guests that I've reached out to. It says they label you anti-vax. Now, I'm not anti-vax at all. I think vaccines work, but I also think this one is a little bit different than we can't really label in the same category as other vaccines. My only thought about the pendulum swinging of if it was going to turn the opposite way is my heart goes out, not for me or for anybody that's being forced into something, but it's being for the people that are injured from a vaccine who are afraid to speak up about it because of the fact they're going to be labeled as anti-vax or they're going to be labeled this. Like, they did get vaccinated, but you're saying vaccines don't work. It's like, well, this vaccine causes a severe side effect in me. Like, you see the compensation program. It's a piss poor one that I think me and Peter agreed on. But there's an aspect to it where they haven't filed out a single claim, and how many people know this thing even exists. Now, if you already are aware that vaccines have to have a compensation program, sure. But I think before, like, I didn't know, but a lot of people like myself heard that you can't sue the manufacturers. So then you have people reaching out on GoFundMes, and you have people that are afraid to speak out about it because they're afraid of creating more stigma or more vaccine hesitancy. Hopefully my idea where I want it to be is I just want that stigma gone. So someone, if they do suffer from something, they know a place they can turn to. But at the same time, they're not afraid to speak out about it and be labeled as something. I think that's the worst thing you can possibly do as a society, is dismiss someone's value. I mean, there's a lot of this equal think out there. And I go, well, if you're going to call someone a name or not hear their voice or hear their opinion or whatever, you are not their equal then. You automatically think that you're better than them. And I think if people stop and really took that in, they can have more empathy. I mean, there's a couple guests before you that I just took a break on having on the show, people that suffered from a vaccine injury, because even if I have one episode where it talks about vaccines, man, if I reach out to a guest, I do a daily show, they hear that, they'd say no. I had 10 loot drop out on me in one day from one episode. You can't, they base the decisions off of what they want to put you as. And that's as if you're against vaccines, you must be against everything. And that's not true. You just have a different perspective. You have a different thing, and you can show evidence to back it up as well too.
Well, first off, most doctors have never been, they don't have any medical training or very little medical training at all on what is called a vaccine injury. Today's medical schools train less than 1 hour class on vaccine injury of what we call the traditional childhood vaccine schedule, measles, mumps, rubella, DTaP, things like this. The compensation program, as you said, has not paid out one compensation award for anything related to COVID, okay? That the countermeasures injury compensation program. And it is a very problematic system. Now, one of the things that I'm doing now currently is I've been assigned a task, and I'm interviewing COVID vaccine injured patients about the filing process and about their interactions with doctors. We mentioned there's a stigma that I don't want to tell everybody that I've been injured. Well, there is also a bigger problem, and that is that most doctors don't believe there's an injury from a COVID vaccine. They say, oh, it's hysteria. It's what you think is yourself. There is no connection between you getting the vaccine and now you're in a wheelchair 30 days later. there's a lot of COVID vaccine injured patients that are fighting their own medical doctors who refuse to treat them appropriately or refuse to acknowledge that it could be because of the vaccine. And that's a problem. That's a big problem, because you can't, if you can't get a doctor to understand it, can you get a doctor to help you with the diagnosis so you can figure out how to get better? It all, there's a domino effect here. So one of the things I'm doing for Congress is outlining these patients. What's their steps? Have they filed? Have they been able to get medical records? Are they getting problems with their doctors and clinics turning over medical records? Are you getting the proper diagnosis? Are you getting treatment? Are doctors saying no? You know, a lot of women are having menstrual female productive issues. And a lot of those doctors are saying, no, that's not connected. It's all in your head. Things like that. So that's difficult for a lot of people. There is two very large organizations out there that are just dealing with COVID vaccine injuries. That's React19 and Real Not Rare. I encourage people, if they are watching the show and listening, if you haven't joined those groups, they're doing a lot of wonderful work helping other people. Some possibly getting some funding to help with medical bills and things like this, but you're gaining knowledge of what is actually happening to you. You're not alone. The worst thing we can do is get people isolated, because then depression sets in and then things get worse. So we need to get people connected with other people that are going through the similar reactions. And the communities are very large. Each of these groups, you've got thousands of people in the United States. It's unbelievable how many people are actually getting injured. And we're not talking just soreness at the arm. We're talking severe reactions. And unfortunately, it's a group that's growing that shouldn't be growing in membership size.
Do you think that a lot of the doctors are incentivized not to do this? Do you think it's more of like, I don't think every doctor is getting paid, but I also think that there's a giant gap in the amount that a doctor knows about their patients in today's day and age, mostly because the patient and the doctor don't really have time to build a relationship based on the doctors. Usually they're, capacity of how many patients they have to see in a day. There's not really enough time to sit there. Like when I go to my doctor, he's like, all the prescriptions still the same. I'm like, I mean, I take one. Yeah. And they're like, all right, cool. Say April, I see you again. And I'm like, what? Like we don't have a interaction. And it's not necessarily the doctor's fault, but it's also the work capacity that's put on top of the doctors, which makes it even weirder when we talk about the number of medical people that were being put in a position of getting mandated to get a shot, even though they have natural immunity from getting COVID in the first place. I mean, there's a lot of just quick accept this, which this whole vaccine thing to me, the people that question stuff, I'm like, that is kind of refreshing, just because I feel like society for the longest time, medically, we expected we're farther than we actually are. I think people have this like hype, like if I asked you, do you know what consciousness is? You said no, but somebody probably does. They don't have consciousness figured out yet. They don't have the human anatomy figured out yet. There are constantly articles coming out saying they discovered a new bone or discovered some type of thing we didn't know we had before. The G-spot's not one spot, it's five spots. I'm like, what? Like, we're entering this territory of like, I think people have an unrealistic expectation of where we are medically. I think people have an unrealistic expectation about what the media's power is. I think there's a lot of stuff where if you start looking into it, you start really being humbled in a sense of like, okay, there isn't a magic pill that's going to cause me to lose 100 pounds in a day. Like, it's not going to happen like that. There's something that might help, but it's not going to do results like these commercials do. I think this is also advertising. If you look at two countries in the world, the only two countries that our pharmaceutical companies are allowed to advertise on television. That is the United States and that is New Zealand. I've talked to plenty of people from other countries that say that's weird. And I think that has a giant influence because you have a lot of people, like you mentioned before with lockdowns, you have a lot of depression going on in this country right now and all over the world that's increasing at younger or increasing at more and more rates and younger ages. And when you show a commercial of someone saying, take this pill, and you see him spinning in a field of wheat, you are really, people want to feel that. People want that experience and they don't care about the side effects that you rattle off real fast at the end.
Well, a lot of the medicines, and you're correct, though, you know, with the two countries, and it is New Zealand and the United States, direct-to-consumer advertising, which is, what, 30 years old now in the United States, maybe, has caused a lot of problems. Pre-COVID, and I have a couple friends that are pharmaceutical sales reps. They sell asthma medication. And when they go in and see doctors, what's interesting is doctors would tell them, I got all these patients and they've already diagnosed themselves. They know exactly what they have, the medical condition, what they have, and what they need to fix it or manage it before they even come and see a doctor. And it's just amazing, the public, they think that they know, you know, the advertising is doing the job correctly, and that is convincing people they have, you know, they have Crohn's disease, so they need Humira to fix it. Well, it doesn't fix it, it just manages it. You're going to live the rest of your life with Crohn's disease if you're taking Humira, which, by the way, you've got to take now for the rest of your life. You'll never correct it. Doctors here, and you talked about incentivizing things. Hospitals and hospital administrators were incentivized in COVID to talk about death certificates. We know that happened. Well, they were incentivized to take the protocol, put them on a ventilator, and then start remdesivir, because that's where the money was that was coming from the federal government to the hospitals, to the administrators. So that's why that's their protocol. You had a guest on, Dr. Peter McCullough. Peter has got a couple different protocols, and he's also talking about his message of preventing hospitalizations by using early treatment. We could have done this and it was saved a lot of lives, but the hospitals were looking at it from a money standpoint, and they don't make any money by telling a patient, you know, start taking ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or something else, and that'll help you improve yourself. They're just saying, oh, you're not severe enough, so come home, come back in 5 days when you barely can breathe, and we'll put you on a ventilator. And by the way, you know, make sure your will is in place, because you're gonna, you know, your estate will need it. So we've incentivized them. Most doctors also are living in an environment of heavy peer pressure or coercion. They know if they step out and say, too many people are getting injured because of the vaccine, or we shouldn't be doing this, their state medical boards, what I call the black hand of medicine, will come up and grab them and pull them down. So their professional licenses are being threatened by coercion of not actually accepting what is actually happening. In April, I was outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin, at a rally. We were speaking at, because of Grace Shara. She was a 19-year-old, special needs. She was Down syndrome, and she developed COVID. It wasn't a severe case. It was a slight case, but the parents took her into the doctor, and the doctor decided to hospitalize her. The hospital then removed the parents away from the child, so that she had no one to advocate for her, and the hospital put her on a dangerous protocol I should say, not Valium, but similar to Valium and some other medicines, and basically she died 4 or 5 days later. And it's just infuriating what the hospitals are doing to people. They won't go and do what's best for that patient. They're looking at it as incentivizing, because they know they must follow a certain protocol established by the CDC, and it's killing thousands of people. And we have to stop this mess. And one article I wrote back in April was called My Greatest Fear. And as a parent of a special needs child, I will never, ever, my wife and I and my other son will never let our son Nick in a hospital or a doctor's office by himself. Never. We will fight. And if they try to separate, we will take Nick with us. We will never allow a medical establishment, because they're not in it for the best interest of that patient. They're in it for incentivizing for whatever their bottom line is. And that's where medicine is today. It's coercion of doctors and incentivizing of hospitals and clinics.
There is something similar, and people would label it as a conspiracy, but it's not really. It was something I was warned of when I was a kid. My grandpa had a motorcycle, and he would always, when he would ride it, I would always be like, "Hey, you know what? I want to get a motorcycle when I grow up." And he goes, "Yeah, just be careful you don't get into a car accident, or you don't get into an accident when you're by yourself, like in a different state or something." And I'm like, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, I mean, if you get in something, you get surgery or your organ, or you're on failure or something like that, they could just let you die and then give your organs to someone who needs it in the hospital." I was like, what, 12, 13 saying that, listening to somebody say that to me and me just asking questions like, what? I didn't know what was going on. Then you look it up and you realize like that's real. Like that's something that actually happens, which speaks to the autism thing that you just mentioned of the case. I mean, it's hard to think that's the world we live in, but I think people really don't understand. Like we put a lot of our own personal values into the way big business and all these other things work. And that's really what you can't do. You have to look at like what's the most effective means or what's the most effective method and overall just making money. And that's kind of what this has been. And another example would be in the past 48 months or so of the pandemic or lockdowns and everything, they never once mentioned just getting healthy. Like they told you to stay inside your house and not leave your house because you could kill your neighbor if you went out and breathed on them. Then they told you, wait a minute, vitamin D is actually good for you. So go get some sun. Just be careful. Make sure you wear a mask when you're walking outside. Wait, now you don't have to wear a mask when you're walking outside. But Fauci says you should wear 2 masks. Hell, even 3 masks. Really be affected with it. You just get into this aspect of like, they obviously don't know what they're talking about, but I feel like they buried the narrative so hard where they got to just double down on everything. And that becomes an issue because I would be 100% more just open if they would just be like, look, this is what we know and this is what we don't know. Don't bluff and tell me that you know when you really don't know. When people say, go force and get this vaccine, and we talk about long-term effects, what's it going to be in 3 and 4 years? That's a real issue. And now you're saying you're going to vaccinate younger kids, like very young ages. Like what's that going to mess with their growth development? You don't know. They haven't been out that long. And it's just, these are things that you should be asking questions to, but you have some people that aren't asking questions to, you have some people that are, and you have some people that are just doing whatever the TV says. And it's very, very important that it's stress that you need to be asking questions, whether they're conspiracy questions or not. You need to ask these questions because you'll start finding out there's more truth in it than you think. But I want to take it to, you mentioned like ivermectin and stuff. I had Dr. Pierre Corey on the show and he kind of ran through the breakdown of ivermectin and everything and how it's been slandered with like ivory tower syndrome amongst doctors. Well, I'm sitting there thinking, are they saying things in public, but doing differently in private? So I look up on my phone of like, maybe I want to make some cash. Let me look up a medical trial study, see if they have like a hair growth thing or they have a beard growth thing I could try. I definitely need the beard growth one. But I was like, what are some trials I could do to get paid? They did a CV6 trial in my town of Maryland. And under the 3 medications, basically they're going to give you COVID and then they would test 3 medications and see which one would be more effective. You would get 1 medication. Someone else would be infected with COVID and get another medication. Now that just sounds crazy giving somebody COVID on purpose and hoping you have the means to treat it. But one of the medications out of the 3 that was listed was ivermectin. And I go, hold on a second. I just saw an article the other day saying that ivermectin actually was causing people to go to the hospital. So are what you're saying in public not the same as what you're doing in private? It makes me question your true intentions.
Well, Pierre Corey has done a wonderful, wonderful job and service breaking down all the bogus garbage studies at ivermectin. And the University of Minnesota here was one of the first to use to study hydroxychloroquine when that first came out, and also ivermectin. And they both concluded that both of these antiviral meds are not show no benefit. Well, the problem with those studies is you got to look into the study itself. And that is that the dosage that they're giving and when they were giving it is a different matter. There's not a drug out there that works when you're 5 days into a severe infection of COVID, when you're already there. But that's when they were looking at the test subject. If they would look at it when the person first got it on day one, those people wouldn't have been to day three and day four with a severe reaction or severe infection. It's just insanity. Now, Pfizer releases their Paxlovid medicine, was it 60 days ago. You know what Paxlovid is? It's ivermectin plus several other drugs that are all combined into it. But that's what they're promoting, to saying, hey, we now have, if you think you've been infected with COVID and you start first developing symptoms, take this Paxlovid at $350 a pill. Well, it's ivermectin plus a few other things, but here's the problem. It's those other things that are causing problems. You get people who are taking this Paxlovid are developing severe kidney problems and liver problems. And there's also a few other little things, ingredients in there. The pharmaceutical industry is not wanting people to get cured. They're wanting to create customers for life. So you take Paxlovid and they say, oh, it saved me from COVID. But now I'm going to be on kidney dialysis 3 or 4 years from now. And it's just crazy what we're doing here. And, you know, Peter Corey and McCullough and Malone are correct in what they're saying. And if you listen to what Gert Van de Bosch is saying, talking about, is that these new variants that are coming out, they're developing, guess who they're going to be infecting? It's the people who've had the vaccines. And then they're going to be relying on Paxlovid and these other meds to take care of it. And they're going to think, oh, it's a wonder drug because I recovered from the COVID infection so quickly. Yeah, and then you also lost your kidneys, or you're going to have to require, you're going to develop hepatitis C or something because your liver's shutting down.
I've talked to a lot of people about vaccines causing variants, and I've had a lot of scientists say that, yeah, there is a possibility of that. And I've had a lot of independent researchers, mostly toilet Googlers, tell me, no, I'm crazy. I mean, it was just like a question that seemed like it made a lot of sense to even ask the question. I find that if you just ask, like I said, asking questions is very, very important. I'm curious to, you ever hear about this? Now, this is a theory, but I was talking to Charles Rixey, who worked for Drastic, about the bioweapon terrorism and all this type of stuff. He kind of went into the origin of the pandemic a little bit, but he mentioned something, or we both kind of did in this discussion, about the infection rates that went up with these false positive tests and the vaccine. Even though the vaccine percentage was higher, the infection rates were still going up. And he said, to this point of people thought they were safe because they got the vaccine, you know, that they could go out and be free. And then they watched the infection rates up. He kind of like, we kind of got to this point of like, was it planned, like, to increase people getting vaccines? You talk about the infection rates hitting these high peaks. And I mean, if you really look at like how big the peaks were, there were like points when, I wouldn't say when lockdowns were opened up, but there were points when they were spouting getting like a shot, or they were saying that we have more people vaccinated rather than an aspect of people that were unvaccinated, which meant, was the reporting off? I mean, do you think that like people were just getting the flu and they called that infection of COVID? I mean, how many people now ask the question of like, oh, I think I have COVID, I got a stuffy nose, or I can't smell? I'm like, I don't think that's COVID. I think that's just the flu. It's kind of like in this pandemic, they say it's going to be endemic, it's never going to end. That's the flu. You're saying COVID seasonal. That's the flu. Maybe it's different symptoms, but you're now mistaking the two. Like we never before said, you know, are you sick? We would say, are you sick? But now it's like, do you have COVID? Do you have COVID? Everything just hopped on the COVID train where I'm like, I feel like people are conflating numbers now. We're conflating the flu with COVID. We're not talking about COVID anymore. How many people go, oh yeah, I had COVID. I beat it in a couple of days. Did you really have COVID or did you just have the flu? I mean, there was a pollen spike in my town. Everybody got a runny nose and flustered eyes. They were all like watery eyes and everything. So many people were like, I think I might have COVID. And they're like staying home, taking off work. I knew a couple shifts I had to cover because people were taking off work. It's not COVID. It was pollen. And they know now. But I'm just saying that's what happens is you ingrain this fear thing into people's heads where you start leading into this point of like, if we sit there and say the reason why I was late to work was because of COVID, we can say the same thing with deliveries. Deliveries all went behind schedule because of COVID. Now for the first, couple months after we opened back up, that's reasonable. But now it's been almost 2 years and you're in this point of like, hang on a second. Like I expect your system to be fixed now, but now everything's blamed to because of COVID. And I think now it's an excuse. It's becoming an excuse.
Well, it is. I think, first off, the PCR testing is just was false positives all the time. The only thing good for PCR testing is if you do the test and then you would sequence the genome, because the PCR test by itself, when you cycle it at such a high rate, which is, you know, above 35, and they were doing it at 35 to 40 to 45. Yeah, you're going to get everybody with a positive test, but that doesn't mean they have COVID. It just means they have particles of COVID. If I do a test on you right now and swab your nasal system, and I'm going to test you for meningitis, I will find that you're positive for it because your sinus contains a lot of different viruses, bacteria, and stuff like this. So if I test for it, I'll find it. It doesn't mean you have it. You have particles of it. That's why our sinus system is used to help clean and cleanse what we breathe in. Okay. So the PCR test was never designed for this. And they used it to create fear that all these testing and stuff like this. Now there is people that will test positive and will be develop severe reaction to the infection. But you see all these baseball players right now that are being tested positive, but they don't develop symptoms other than they might have an allergic reaction. But if they actually did an antibody test, like an IgG type antibody test or whatever, you'll find out. I did have COVID last August. I had 1 week of sneezing, runny nose, okay, and a little bit of coughing. But I did do an antibody test, and it shows that I was exposed and I did develop symptoms. Now, Gert Van de Bosch is telling people that if you vaccinate people, you're vaccinating for the spike protein, and that vaccine will create some neutralizing antibodies for the spike. And then, but that's the problem. Now all the variants come along, and they have different I shouldn't say different properties of the virus. That's why the people who have been vaccinated are getting symptoms from the Omicron variant. It's because the vaccine doesn't protect them for that. And as we now move into other variants, we're going to have some problems with those who have been vaccinated, and they're going to be the first to develop some symptoms of COVID because the vaccine doesn't protect them for it. You see that narrative, instead of safe and effective, it'll prevent death and prevent severe infection. That's going to change too. You're going to see people who are going to be passing away or have severe reaction and causing hospitalizations. Oh, I was vaccinated and I got my booster. I thought I was protected. No, you're not. It's also the reason why our justice system through the White House is now going back to court and trying to get masking on airlines. They want to control the narrative because they believe that if you do that, you have masking, you have obedience, and you have people having stoked in the fear, oh, we shouldn't be spreading. Because if we don't, and people enjoy going to flying airlines, and you don't see cases develop, then the natural immunity discussion takes center stage, and they want to protect against having natural immunity being what it should be.
I thought it was pretty astonishing when they mentioned that they were actually looking into natural immunity. I was like, that, I feel like that would, we've spent so much time silencing things. I'm like, it's going to be very, very hard to try and go back and look into those types of things. Like when I see a trial for ivermectin, or when I see these types of things, I'm like, man, you've literally blacklisted that thing in the eyes of the public, where people like are still hesitant on. Like, I was recommended taking ivermectin after I beat COVID in 2 days. I don't ever take Tylenol. I would not take ivermectin either. It's not that I don't think the drug works. I just don't take medicine like that. And I was recommended to help with like brain fog, because I still have some brain fog today and everything as well too. And you know, I'm just like, man, from what I've heard, there's been like some weird things with it. And it's like, it's not necessarily that I believe it, but that's the first thought that comes in my head. And I realize it's because it's what I've seen. It's what I've saw on the television, whether that's true or not. I mean, we saw the Rolling Stones article that talked about the number of ivermectin people filling up the hospital beds. They had a postponed gunshot victims that were waiting in the ICU because the hospital beds were filled up with ivermectin patients. It wasn't true. The article was false. And then if you look at the picture they used, it was a picture of the wintertime when people were standing in line to get vaccinated. It's just like, dude, you have a bigger responsibility as a media network to tell people the truth, because you're really messing with people's minds. I mean, we've literally, me and you, for instance, just to get a video on YouTube, probably will steer away from certain topics. This one's not going up on YouTube, but I'm just saying it's because of the guidelines that are on YouTube's thing, where you start going, okay, I got to remember, I can't say anything about the vaccines. It doesn't fit the official narrative. I can't talk about these types of things, or they'll flag me and take off my video. So then you're now being programmed to just restrict yourself on the things that you say. And it's like, people fight the fight saying, oh no, you think people should just, what happens if someone wants to go incentivized violence against someone? I'm like, but this isn't that though. This is talking about something that shouldn't be a controversial subject. We should be able to talk about politics. We should be able to talk about vaccines. We should be able to talk about anything. If you have a topic that you immediately could think of, religion, whatever it was, religion used to be a stigmatized topic. I feel like you can talk about it more now. But all these topics that have become stigmatized, you're not letting the conversation elevate and lead into something where you both come back with a better perspective of what the other person views. Now you've dropped it at this thing where, I guess, we're not agreeing, so we're just going to walk away from each other. That's not how this works. You want to get actual things done. You need to talk about these types of hard topics like the COVID topic.
Right. It's just, censorship is really bad. I've had several interviews that I've, video interviews that I put up on YouTube and Rumble, and within 1 hour of being posted up on YouTube, they're all brought down to the point now where I'm warned, one more strike and you're gone permanently. So I have to bypass YouTube. I go out to Rumble, I go out to BitChute, post interviews that way. If it's an audio interview, I could go out and post it in several different places, not a problem. But when big tech, and this is where I find fascinating, is when you watch the national discourse at in Congress in regards to big tech, you'll have senators who rally for big tech when it calls for censorship of COVID misinformation. Then they're against big tech when they're talking about how they prospered during the lockdowns as far as profits, or they're back and forth. They hate big tech, they hate whatever. Here in Minnesota, we have state senators that were totally against pharmaceutical industry because of the opioid issues. You know, we had state senator who's totally against the pharmaceutical industry because her son overdosed on opioids. But then she's sitting there just lovey-dovey with them talking about the vaccine issue. It's unbelievable, you know, where they sit, and they're flip-flopping back and forth. the censorship that we're getting, we cannot have a civil discourse. Goes back to my original thing about with Peter Myers. We don't believe in the same vaccine policy, but we can talk about what happens to a vaccine injured person and the compensation. We should have those same type of level of respect and conversations with the medical community, with our doctors, with the so-called experts who are nothing but, you know, paid consultants, but we can't. And that's a shame. That's really a shame in the United States when we can talk about Satan, we can talk about religion, we can talk about everything, but we can't talk about vaccines. Isn't that something?
It's a little nuts, I'm not gonna lie. I think it only hinders our growth as people, but mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. When I had Peter on, I think we reached a common ground on some things. We definitely have some different views on stuff, but I mean that.
Right.
I don't have a bias in anything. I think the only bias is I just don't like power control things, and that's what I see with this pandemic. I mean, it's very, very difficult to. Whenever someone says like, "Well, it's like going to draconian measures," I think it's just the words that have been programmed into society. Those words come off as like Illuminati conspiracy types, and it's like it's not really what that is. It's actually, it's what's happening. There's a lot of measures being set in place, and it's goalposts moving. They keep inching their power farther and farther and farther, and it's just because they can. I mean, I don't think that. These people aren't, I mean, they probably smell like sulfur at some points. It seems like some of them definitely probably smell like sulfur. But I think when you really look at the thing, I think we're all just running off the information that we're given. And we just got to question the information that we're given. Is it accurate? I mean, how accurate are these things that are being reported? I mean, you can look anywhere on the internet and more articles are going to come up saying vaccines have no side effects than the vaccines that do. And hopefully that tide will turn where people will just learn to, if someone does have if you have a side effect, if I get a side effect, if someone has a side effect from something, they can go seek help and not be afraid to say something or make a post about it. I mean, you put it on Facebook, you have a side effect, it gets flagged in a minute and it's gone and it's done because it's misinformation, disinformation. It's just like, what are we calling disinformation? I mean, if it's a personal experience, I'm glad YouTube adjusted that, but makes it difficult, but I'm glad people like you are out there having conversations with people and talking about these topics and also able to pull out, you know, information and show people and point them to right sources. So I think that's important. Is there a place where people can find your podcast or a place where people can find your Twitter handle? I think you followed me on Twitter. I'm going to follow you back.
Yeah. My podcast is the Right on Point podcast. So you can just go rightonpoint.online. That's the website for the podcast. My books, you can get out there on the vaccinecourt.com and you can go from there and all the, a lot of my articles, plus also my Substack, which is the vaccinecourt.substack.com is where you'll see my writings. And then, you know, you can go out to Twitter. You can get me out there. I comment on a lot of things, not just vaccines out on Twitter. Twitter is like the sewer of social media. But it's a lot like of fun to swim down in there and get down in the depths.
It's at Wayne Road on Twitter.
Just Twitter, me. Right. He's kind of a friend of mine. Someone that I've known for a while. He's an actor, famous actor known as Meathead. It's Rob Reiner.
I thought you were going to say Johnny Depp. I was like, no, I need to talk about the court case.
No. I ignored that.
That was fun. That was entertaining.
Yeah. But Rob Reiner and I don't see eye to eye on many things, but we did see eye to eye on the buildup of the Iraqi war and the issues where our government lied to us and the United Kingdom government, England, lied to their citizens as well. And he did a movie called Shock and Awe, where he was a newspaper editor and he had two reporters. And this is real life stuff. Two reporters that actually reported on what was actually happening and the buildup of our government lying to the public, lying to the United Nations, to try to get a resolution to support the invasion of Iraq. And it was proven out after the fact that they were correct. Well, Rob is and I are on different ends of the political spectrum. And I think I made him extremely mad yesterday when he said, you know, talking about all this gun violence, we need to get rid of all the guns. And I said, well, that doesn't fix the problem, the core problem. The core problem is that why are these young teenagers or young adults doing this? And he says, you could take the guns away, but are they going to use grenades? Are they going to use knives? Are they going to use pipe bombs to achieve what their goal is? And then he says, well, you know, X number of kids have died because of gun violence. And I said, yeah, but look at the number of deaths from fentanyl and opioid overdose. They're 10 times as greater, but you're not talking about it. And he gave me the middle finger on Twitter. And he'll come back in a couple of weeks and we'll get back to it. But, you know, that's just the way it is that we can't have a civil discourse there. I was just trying to reach out that we've got a lot of problems in the United States and worldwide regarding the untimely death of individuals that shouldn't, we should be, you know, we got car accidents, we got everything, but suicides, we got drug overdose. It's just taking lives that shouldn't happen. And God forbid, you mentioned the number of kids that were never born because of the abortion rates, you know. That's tough. Now, these are discussions that we should have, but we can't have a civil discourse on because we're so polarized and charged topics. And you can't, some people are conceived as if you come to the middle to talk about it and sit down and talk about it, you're showing weakness. No, you're not. You're just showing willingness to discuss things that we disagree on. And that's what's missing in today. It's been missing for the last 20 years. We can go from there. But, you know, we did have that conversation way before you were born. I imagine when your parents were just kids, and that was called the Vietnam War. And we had a major divide in the country. And civil rights and the Vietnam War divided the country apart.
I've had like
eight. But we started putting that back together.
I've had like eight JFK experts who've all been in Oliver Stone's film on the show.
The thing is that our nation started having civil discussion on Vietnam a decade later. And we started to agree on things. It might be another decade or so. We don't know on COVID yet because people don't understand the history of viruses. When they start circling around the world, it takes several years before we start becoming where we can control it through natural immunity and other things, you know, whether vaccine programs and all that. So I wish people would just sit down and talk instead of threatening each other and yelling and screaming at each other.
It'll happen eventually. I think eventually more people are going to wake up to it. I think it's just about sparking up that conversation. If I manage to, you know, be able to get eight people who all disagree on different aspects of the JFK assassination in one room, I think people just need that first kind of step forward into a section of, you know, like, oh, I trust this person. And if he says this person's okay, then that's how we get through. But communication can't happen on social media. It just can't. It doesn't work well. That's why I'm rarely on social media. I put one post up a day and that's it. I just don't spend any time on it. It's a hindrance, but for the people that do use it as a communication tool and find it effective, the best means of communication is set up an appointment, set up anything, even if it's a Zoom call, talk to someone, have a conversation. You know, it helps out mental health wise. I always feel charged after I do these things. But Wayne, I'm going to link all your links in the description. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and thanks for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank.